All right. Let me get back to the top of my agenda. Good morning, everybody. This is, I suppose, our second meeting, but really first substantive meeting for the NFIL, I'll get that acronym, Oversight Committee.
Although now I'm being told that we don't want to use that on a regular basis because for marketing purposes, it's not a good thing. But I'll explain that later.
Okay, you explain that later.
Internally, right. We'll call it NFIL, but when we start talking to the public about it, we're going to stop calling it.
Got it. Okay. Well, the Oversight Committee meeting. How about that, guys? We don't need to do an introductions, Ron, or would you prefer that for the record?
We can. Okay. Since we have a large Facebook audience watching this at 10 o'clock or maybe sometime in the future.
Sometime in the future. All right. Well, I am Kristen Dozier, Warren County Commissioner and Chair of the Committee.
Kevin Graham, I am at Florida State, the Office of Real Estate Foundation.
And Vice Chair.
And Vice Chair of the LCRDA.
I'm Ron Miller, Executive Director of LCRDA.
Tom Allen, Capital City Bank, Real Estate Management.
Cam Whitlock with Architects Lewis & Miller.
All right. Ray?
I'm Ray Bai. I'm a member of the Authority Board and a retired FSU official.
Great. We also have Peggy with us. All right, Ron.
You do not need to do approval of participation by electronic means since we're all participating.
Okay. And any modifications to the agenda?
One thing I'd like to do is Cam, are you planning to stay in for the whole meeting and just stay in and meeting with me after?
No, I'm planning to go back to my office.
Okay, then if we could move item number 8 mm-hmm. up as after public comment, which there is none, but mm-hmm. And go ahead and do the project update so Cam can leave and go back to his office.
Sounds good. Okay.
Great, and that's me.
Yeah. okay, and no public comments. So that moves us right into item 8. You're up, Cam.
Actually, I don't have an agenda prepared.
What we're going to do is I'm going to.
I should have looked to Ron, of course.
That's all right. What we'll do is if I can give me just a second here to share.
Okay.
So the first item is the project schedule, and I will share that momentarily. So that everyone at home can see this. Never puts the screen where you want it.
We're going to have said it before. We're going to figure out all of the electronic Zoom stuff, everything else, right when we don't have to do it anymore.
Okay.
All right.
I got to figure it out. My fingers aren't working very well here. So, anyway, Cam, do you want to go ahead and just kind of step through the project schedule?
Sure. I have a different version on my screen that I can see better. But right now, we are kind of kicking off the schematic design phase of the project. We're having our first. Working group meeting today, later this morning, to review the development of schematic design. So we're looking at how the building's fitting on the site and a first kind of floor plan layout for the building. We are going to be, we're shooting for submitting schematic design on April 7th. So we have a pretty aggressive schedule at the first of the project for a program, which we've completed in schematic design. Next, we move into design development. Which will last from April 8th to about through July 1st, so that we have a longer working phase in as we're really developing the systems of the building, which is key to this building's budget and functioning down the road. So from there, we have in July, August, and September, we're working on 50% construction documents, so that's also the time we'll be submitting for the City of Tallahassee. Concurrency application, site plan approval, NFI, a lot of site related submittals in the summer and early fall. followed by then 100% documents will last from roughly the end of September to early December. At that point, we'll have the documents completed and going into permitting and giving us a good window of time, about 8 weeks or so to get permits for the building secured before we bid the project. Always focused on the EDA dates that we're required to meet. I believe, is it mid-March for the bidding? Is that correct? March 17th? I can't remember the specific date.
Well, the notice to proceed is has to be in March of 2022.
Right. And so we're kind of 2 weeks ahead of, I think, the deadline for that date. We're trying to do everything a little early.
Okay. Where do you see the bidding process starting?
I see us starting the bidding process. We'll probably be getting the documents prepared in December for release in January.
Okay.
So we're bidding it while it's going through permitting still. We'll make sure that we don't receive final bids until we get all permit comments resolved, or at least we know what they are so that we can get any revisions into the documents and get those bid. So we'll have the documents released, people looking at them, pricing them.
Okay. So inside of our $17 million estimated project cost.
Yes.
Given the fact that we've seen construction cost escalate substantially in the last year or three.
Correct.
And understanding the time frame of the commitments and the grant and so forth, how confident are we that this building fits in this budget?
Right now, we're still determining where it fits within the budget. I do think that we will have to create some flexibility in terms of either shell space, alternates, scaling back on the program a little bit. I think the building, right now, the cost per square foot for the building that's allocated by the program that we were given, the budget we were given, is $316 a square foot. That's for all space. We know lab spaces are much more expensive than that. So we have some support space, office space, warehouse space, which is less expensive than that. So until we get the floor plan kind of nailed down, I don't know how we're going to adjust within that, but we'll come back to you working with Ron with recommendations as to how we can prepare ourselves, prepare for bid day, because we definitely want to be able to have a package we can put on the street, get bid for within your budget. So we are already thinking about that. I've had conversations with Ron that I do feel like the square footage in the building itself is aggressive for the budget we have.
Okay. So we kind of went through a process, and we're going to show you the program that he came up with that he's working from. And he gave me the call after we finished that and said, I don't think we're going to be able to do this. And so that program was very aspirational. And so we know we're going to have to scale some of that back.
Okay.
And it definitely, we went very heavy on lab space. Mm-hmm. Wet lab space, as they say, is expensive. But in our original concept, when we were thinking about this, we weren't necessarily thinking about quite that much lab space.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of this is modular, right? I mean,
yes.
In terms of design. So it's a little bit of plug and play, I think, from what I'm seeing so far. And so I think we're going to be able to scale it appropriately to fit the budget, and that's always been the plan. But the first go around on this program was purely aspirational, what we're trying to cover. But because we don't have a real defined market in terms of what the demand is on any particular component, it will be easier to build, as he's saying, some shell space in, and if later, and we can use it initially as more of a space for companies that want to build things that don't necessarily need lab space. But if we see an increase in demand later, and we've built in some of the infrastructure that we need to be able to convert space, then we'll be able to adjust to the demand in the future.
Got it. And this is not a comment that requires a detailed answer. It's just something I want to float out there. I'm assuming that there are some minimum standards, minimum requirements for that are part of the grant funding that need to be maintained through the design process, but that we feel confident that we're going to be able to meet all of the minimum requirements for the grant.
More questions? Sorry.
Through the design and build process.
We are very aware of the minimum requirements. I think the square footage requirement or what is stated in the EDA grant is aspirational. We've talked to ASA, the grant administrator, and about the flexibility of having a two-story building versus a one-story building, because the site also is very, we're finding it's very high for a one-story building.
Got it.
And he has some flexibility on that. I know that we're going to shoot for having the shell space to meet the square footage requirements and see where that gets us.
Yeah, the scope in the grant says 40,000 square feet, and it's these kinds of spaces. It doesn't say how much of each one of those kinds of spaces. Okay. So the biggest challenge will be the one story versus the two story, because any change to that's in the scope of work, and any change to that scope of work for the grant has to be approved by them. And while he's now saying, which he didn't initially, but he's now saying, yeah, you can submit for a change, but it takes a little time. So my concern is, if you know, time is our enemy right now, and how much time that's actually going to take, we don't know. And he has also said that if you can't, you know, give the notice to proceed by the March deadline, just send me a letter saying you're going to withdraw from the grant. Okay. So I mean, that's exactly what he said. I mean, but then when we had our kickoff meeting, he did say, hey, you know, if you can demonstrate the reason, then we can maybe do the change. But so we've
got it.
Yeah.
We've got to juggle both of those issues.
Makes sense.
Sorry, anyone
else? Go ahead. I'm done.
Okay, this is something that I've always, you and I have talked about in the past, the one story versus the two story. And as we learn more about the site, kind of wondered if we were going to run into some challenges. So with the site plan, you're looking at July for submitting the site plan approval. Mm-hmm. We're going to know if we need to justify a amendment for a two-story building. That's going to be the first thing we know is site constraints, and we don't have to wait too long for that, right?
We should know that. I want to know that through the schematic design process. So in the next month,
yeah,
we're already finding, I think, that. And we're going to show the team today that the one-story building is just because of there are, you know, building setbacks, but there's a landscape buffer, and we have the wetlands, which also has a setback. It's really pinched down the site, and the number of parking spaces that are in the EDA document is also, you know, a constraint. So we're really just, it's trying to put way too much on a very limited site.
It looked like the perfect site, right there at the corner and everything. Yeah,
it is a beautiful site, and I do think that with the two-story scheme, it will fit much more elegantly.
And I would assume, I mean, I'm probably jumping ahead of your work here, but there's going to be some choices to make of what could go on a second story in a building like this, and what has to go on the first story. Just vibrations, you know, from a makerspace or something.
Absolutely.
Like that, messing up other labs. I'm on the right track, so we're going to have some choices there.
Yep. Yeah, that's already being thought about.
Okay.
For sure.
And I mean, I know you haven't gotten there yet, but if you were to do a two-story, would it be a box, or would it be a bigger first floor and first story? Second,
well,
you even thought about that yet?
So what we're looking at doing, what we're looking at today will be, we're basically stacking labs. We'll have some of the labs that don't create as much vibration, like the bio lab and the chem labs, wet labs on the second floor, the maker space, more industrial labs be on the lower level. You know, obviously the entry will be on the lower level. The loading dock, fab lab, all that kind of maker space will be on a one-story space, and it might not have program stacked on top of it, but so the majority of the building is stacked labs with some support, some of the support spaces off to one side.
I got you. Makes sense.
Yeah. It stacks pretty nicely.
Okay.
But Another reason to think about building footprint, building spread is because there is, as we all know, a lot of slope on that site. So if we can condense the footprint of the building, it allows us more flexibility in how we deal with that grading. And so what we want to do is avoid retaining walls because they're expensive and they don't serve a lot of functional purpose for you, whereas lab space and rentable income does. So the justification, there is justification there to not spend $100,000 on retaining walls and put that money into elevators and stairs.
Yeah.
It makes a whole lot of sense. And I'm glad you're focused on in the next month, because getting that approval in, or the amendment
yes,
in to ASA, if that's the direction we're going to go, it sounds like it could come before July when
absolutely.
You submit for site.
It will.
Okay. You know, it might make sense to go ahead and take a quick look at the program
yeah.
before
Thank
we get
you.
Into the cash flow projection.
Before we mm-hmm. get him to tell us exactly how it's going to be built.
Yeah. and so, again, keep in mind, this was the aspirational part.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm sorry, Ron, just as you get into this, that was a good clarification. I appreciated the reminder that we didn't have set square footage. I just wanted to make sure I heard that right, Ron, for wet lab.
Yes, correct.
Dry lab, that's, we just said it's going to be a mix of all these things.
Correct.
That was smart on your part. Thank you.
One of the few things that was smart, because they're holding my feet to the fire on everything else that we said. So more than I thought they were going to. And again, I don't know that we need to get into the text here, because I think he's kind of covered a lot of that. Unless there's anything else you want to highlight here, but Ken, was there any, you want to?
No, I think.
Because I think you talked about the site and some of the issues with the site. You had mentioned, I don't know if you mentioned this, but the concept with the two-story is you also avoid some of the retaining walls.
Yes.
You yeah. mentioned that, okay.
And you said in here the geotech is underway.
The geotech is, I'm expecting recommendations this week.
Okay.
They did find evidence of, I guess, karst features under the footprint of the building, but nothing detrimental. There's a recommendation for having a reinforced slab, but it's not definitive. So depending on the building final design, we may not have to have the reinforced slab, and I'm not anticipating any major mitigation on sinkholes.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. Because we got a preliminary geotech, those types of things, but this is the more detailed.
Yeah. Right? No, we've never done a geotech.
We've never done the geotech.
No,
we just did the archaeological.
Archaeological stuff.
Got it. Thank you.
That we know from other work that's been done.
Yeah.
Here,
yeah.
It's flagged on GIS as having, you know, karst features.
That's probably what I remember. Okay, thank you.
Let's see what else.
I think page 10, 11, and 12 is the program document. That's what you're looking for.
Yeah, I was trying to see if there's anything else really important. But yeah. So this is the space summary. So again, one of the things we looked at is, you know, from a financial plans, not just the demand piece, but the financial side of things, is what's leasable space is going to be critical. But then again, it's also, you know, what will the market bear in terms of lease rates? And, you know, that's a big unknown as well. So that's been the direction all along, is to maintain maximum flexibility so we can adapt to whatever the market demand is going to be. But the key to that is trying to minimize a lot of what they're calling support space that's, you know, not critical. So, you know, small reception area, you know, we only have two, you know, one administrative office built into this. But our thought is that if we have to add additional support staff, there's going to be enough other offices, which office space is not going to be the key to what we're trying to accomplish. The key is going to be these other unique spaces. So if we have to bleed staff into some of these other leasable office spaces, we'll have to do that. But so that's part of the flexibility that we're trying to build in, rather than baking in, you know, 12 support offices, which obviously not going to be that. But there will be a small co-working area, break room. what they're calling huddle rooms. So a couple of small rooms where people, not, you know, not a full size conference room, but a couple of small rooms where people can, you know, a couple people, kind of like what we have across the hall here, and possibly glassed in. A conference room that's bigger than a typical conference room, so that we can do basically kind of like this room where we can do seminars. Although this room's a little larger than 500 square feet. And then here's the, these are the labs. So we had kind of defined these main labs as bio wet labs, chemistry wet labs, dry labs, and fab labs. And the difference is the bio wet labs obviously are they have hoods, but they're in sinks, but they don't necessarily, trying to think what was the other piece. The chemistry labs are gonna have hoods built in, but the bios, I'm trying to remember, we don't have hoods built into the bio labs, is that correct?
I think so. I've
slept with bubbles. Anyway, so there's a distinction though between what the bio wet labs do and chemistry labs do, but it's not a huge distinction. And then the dry labs and fab labs, the difference there is the dry labs don't have hoods, and the flex labs don't have hoods, but they'll have snorkels. So if we need to exhaust things out of those labs, we can. The dry labs have finished floors and ceilings, whereas the fab labs do not.
Yeah.
And as part of that, just, you know, it's, again, it's flexibility on what kind of stuff you can do in there. So if you're building something and it's dirty and smelly and whatever, you can be in a fab lab. If you need a cleaner space, maybe to do, you know, electronics type stuff, then the dry lab will work for you. And then these couple of support rooms, autoclave and a support lab. And then also up there, we have a cell culture lab, which is a shared resource for most of the bio stuff that goes on. And that was something that FSU sort of said, yeah, you need a cell culture lab. Actually, I think we have two small cell culture labs built in. And then we have the prototype lab. So a metal shop and then some clean fabrication. Again, that's where you're gonna be able to do the electronics and 3D printing and that kind of stuff. The metal shop is where, you know, you can build some prototypes and maybe some small run manufacturing. We really shrunk that down from what we originally were thinking. Originally we were thinking 5,000 square feet, but we went out, we took a look at a shop that Rob Parsons, one of our contributors to the project, who does that sort of thing. We saw his project out in Monticello and his space out there. And he's got 3,000 square feet and lots of room. But basically, a lathe, a milling machine, some 3D printers,
CNC machines.
Yeah, so you don't need a ton of space. So, and our thought is that we're probably going to contract for somebody to run that part of the operation. It's not something we're necessarily going to do ourselves, but we think we can contract that out and potentially even have that entity running their business out of that. That could be part of what they do, and at the same time providing support to the tenants.
I'm sorry, Brent, you're talking about the fabrication lens.
Yes,
that's
metal shop.
Yeah, this section here. Yeah, metal shop and clean fabrication. Now, fab labs is something different. Up above, those are leasable spaces.
Yeah.
Right. So up above, it says flex lab.
That's the fab lab.
That's the fab. I thought when you were going through, okay. It said flex lab, and I was on the right track. Thank you, Kim.
Sorry,
I saw fabrication.
I think I had steamed up my glasses at that point.
I completely understand. Okay, so for the metal shop, you were thinking 5,000 and we're now...
For the prototype lab, we were thinking 5,000 originally and now we're, about 1,600.
Okay, got it. I just wanted to make sure I was following
the
numbers. So we're good.
Yeah, because we originally based it on what we saw for Georgia Tech and how they had things arranged, but you know, that's, you know, just a overkill, I think, for what we're going to need initially.
And the clean fabric is more assembly space.
Well, there's no clean. We're not doing the clean room.
Clean.
Oh, this up here?
No, down.
It's under the metal shop.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Clean fabrication. Yeah, that's the 3D printing.
Okay.
You know, electronics, breadboarding.
I got you.
Okay. For the 3D printing, I mean, I don't know if they do the same type of printers or not, but they're often stacked. I mean, it's
a fabrication hub. So. You can get everything from, you know, tabletop to room size.
So, yeah, I mean, it's just for space use. You have some flexibility for sizing down that room.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Again, we're not, I don't think we're anticipating having the really large format printers.
That's, yeah. Okay.
And again, this, a lot of this is subject to change as we try to figure out, you know, what fits where. But this kind of fits the financial model that we get built. And then other support spaces, shipping, receiving, and then the, you know, the electrical, mechanical data. We're not going to provide for telephone, any sort of telephone wiring in the building. It's all going to be data and voice over IP if we decide to go, you know, with the phone system. Most of the incubators I've talked to, they don't do phone.
They don't need to.
Yeah, anymore, it doesn't make sense.
If somebody needs that, they can buy a subscription service or avoid phone.
The data is going to, wires. Some chemical waste storage provision in the service yard and cylinder storage. We had a lot of conversations about how to handle that, both for tenant access and also for deliveries. Trying to get as low maintenance as possible. We've also got some leasable storage space. So tenants that, you know, inevitably they don't have enough, you know, storage in their, in the space that they're occupying. So they'll be able to lease cages in a small warehousing area.
Can I pause you there for a
second?
Just that we have to get creative in looking at the space usage and everything. Is the warehouse space, the storage space, something that we can look at remainder of Collins, a portion here? I mean, it's
about accessibility.
It is about, I mean, yeah, they need it right. Yeah,
they're going to want it. We're not talking about they need, 5,000 square feet. We're talking about I need a cage to store my stuff in.
Got it. Okay. Does it just wanted to?
No, that's fine.
Yeah.
So, and then there's your summary down below. So it's 71% of the net is leasable. Unfortunately, we got a pretty large gross to net factor to get to that 27,000 square feet. So you lose a lot just in hallways and.
That's actually efficient, July. One of those is efficient.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the basic program as it stands today. And again, that's our starting point. We expect this to change.
Did we hear something from the speaker? Was that Ray or Peggy? I just want to make sure. Okay.
No.
We're good. All right.
And then, so that's the program and the schedule. And then the cash flow. So what I wanted to do is take a look at how the funds would flow, and because I had some concerns about.
Ray's got a question.
Madam Chair.
Yes, sir.
Am I? Are you hearing me?
Yes. We got
it. Okay, thank you. Before you leave the programming section and the move on to the finances, I got a couple of questions. Early on, Ron, in your schedule, you had programming workshops 1 and 2 or 2 and 3 having been completed. How relevant were those workshops? What came out of those? And how have those impacted the square footage distribution in your schematic plan?
Cam, what'd you take from the meeting?
Well, I do think that there was a lot of community input talking about what is needed to serve the community. I think one of the big items that stands out to me is that metal shop space and the input from, what was the gentleman's name?
Rob Parsons.
Rob Parsons, and touring that facility is an example of where the initial thought was to have a metal shop of 5,000 square foot, and it resulted in the final product, we're looking at something much smaller. I think that's a good example. There's a lot of talk about equipment needs and the need for high bay space to bring in large equipment, which ended up another example from Rob's tour, I believe, where we don't need to have 20 foot clear ceiling spaces. We only need 15 feet, which happens to dovetail in with the height of the typical floor height. So we don't actually have any super high space that we're building, which helps budget. There's a lot, just a number of technical items were discussed. There was a detailed discussion about deliveries and do they come in the front door? Do they come in the back door? How is that secured? How was the security of the entrance to the building? There are meeting minutes in the back of the program document that documents those two meetings particularly well.
Okay.
There's not a lot of other meeting minutes, but those two are in the program if you want to read through that.
And the other part was that was sort of teeing up some other input we'll be looking for down the road as we get through the process. And one of those was Rick Meeker. Rick kind of came in on the second meeting, I think. And he and Cam, I think you guys have already.
We did not end up meeting. I had a conflict.
Okay. So, but anyway, we've made that connection between Cam and Rick, and they're going to talk about some of the energy efficiency opportunities that could be built in. We talked about how we might include Danfoss in their equipment in the project, things like that.
Okay. Second question. At some point you mentioned you were going to face a decision about whether to cut back the size of the building and the capabilities of the center. For financial reasons. This is probably directed more toward to Kim Moore. But I'm wondering whether there have been efforts or would there be efforts or are there appropriate efforts that could be made to look for additional funding at this point that would allow us to move forward with a full-blown incubator, as opposed to a pared back one that we necessarily have to pare back because of current budget capabilities?
Well, you know, I don't know if there's time in the process, number one, to go raise additional funds. But the other part is that the programming that we're talking about was, again, it was aspirational. We didn't have a defined program before. So when we say scaling back to building, we're talking about scaling back from aspirational, not necessarily from some defined model that we had before that says, you know, this is the optimal model. We're guessing as to the market demand. It's an educated guess, but it's still a guess. So to know that we need, 15 wet labs versus 10, we don't know for sure that that's what we need. So we had always intended to design the building to the budget to some degree. So this is we're not really deviating from what we thought we were going to do necessarily.
Ron, I think, Ray, if you don't mind, Kevin had something on that point.
A follow-up, yeah. Ray, I thought your point was well made. It looks like the gross square footage of the building is just over 40,000 square feet, 40,788, and the minimum has to be 40,000, correct?
Yeah.
So, Ray, I don't think it's a function of reducing the building size as much as it's a function of
what goes in those.
That may be unfinished.
Okay.
But I think your point about looking for additional funding so that those spaces can be finished at some point in the future and maybe sooner rather than later is spot on.
I was just going to add to that, I think that, you know, it may even be swapping the types of space that you build because the bio lab and chem labs are going to be the most expensive spaces, and maybe you have more of the flex labs, which are much more open spaces that can be infilled later with equipment as they, as long as we program and plan for some of the additional, say, fume hoods down the road, then, you know, we can have some flexibility in swapping around some of the program components. The other point is, I believe additional funding is still needed for equipment. And, you know, that might be a better place to search for your fundraising efforts or concentrated fundraising efforts.
So to Cam's point, I think that there's an interesting cash flow analysis to figure out which spaces are most leasable for the greatest return. And then I would also urge caution that we don't aim too low on the front end on the most expensive spaces, because those are also the hardest spaces to come back after the fact and finish out.
Right.
In other words, we know we have $17 million. We've identified the $17 million. And if we say that this building will serve X purpose, but then we withhold building out some of the most intricate spaces on the front end, the chances of us finding the money and coming back later to finish those spaces is diminished.
Right. Well, one last point I'd like to make, and that is that clearly magnet-related technologies has been identified by OEV and others as a really key component for growth in this region. Has any thought been given to approaching Danfoss, which I understand had a portion of their new building going to be developed toward R&D space? Is there any possibility that you might be able to persuade Danfoss to put that space into your building and pay the costs of it and use their building exclusively for manufacturing purposes?
Ray, I'll jump in here, Ron's looking. I'm not sure if you did the tour of the R&D space at Danfoss, but just what comes to my mind, it is very unique. It looks very different than their other space, and it was funded by Danfoss Corporate. So I'm not.
And it's very large.
Yeah, let me say, I'm not sure we could afford to build their space as part of this grant, or duplicate that.
I wasn't suggesting that we build it for them. I was suggesting they build it for us in our building and use their space for manufacturing as opposed to R&D. Right now, you're in a unique position because they're about as far along in their planning process as we are. And I think it'd be an opportune time to have that kind of conversation to see if there's a partnership that could be developed at this early phase.
Well, when you say they're about as far along in their planning, that's for their new manufacturing space. The R&D space has been open and operational for some time.
In the new building, my understanding is there is R&D space.
Okay, there's additional R&D space. They already have one.
Now, the building that they're building is going to be exclusive manufacturing.
That's not correct, Ron, I don't believe.
Well, my understanding is, from the presentations I've seen, that they're going to move all the manufacturing out of the current building over to the new building and expand all the R&D into the current building. That's what we've been told.
Okay, you may have more recent information than I do. I was just under the impression that the new building.
Ricardo's done a couple of presentations for us in the last month or so.
Okay.
And actually, he's not going to be at the next one, but yeah.
Well, Ray, I like the creativity. I think, as Ron said earlier, I would wonder, I mean, the scope of the project as presented to the EDA and the grant, if there are details within that scope, like the 40,000 square feet, other things, we have to ask for an amendment to just do a two-story building versus one story. And that would take some time. And you will know the time it takes to go through EDA. So I would wonder if any major scope change like that would, I would guess it would need an amendment. And if we're already seeking one for a second floor, I would just be concerned that we're taking a little bit more time. On the other hand, I will say this, looking for those partnerships in the future, you're always talking about other property, as is Dave. I've seen research parks that have they build one incubator and then they need a spec building soon after that for companies that are moving into another stage and want to have their own office space. There could be a lot of partnerships in the future. So I don't think it's bad to have that conversation, but I'm not sure that this grant and the time schedule could accommodate those kind of conversations right now, because Ricardo would probably have to go back to corporate. Ron, do you agree?
I agree. I think, trying to change the scope of the EDA grant right now and trying to, because that would change the use of the building to put private sector in like that, that's not really facilitating the startup piece. I think that would be incredibly challenging. We do have a partnership with Danfoss, and if you recall, we did a letter agreement a few years ago as part of one of their expansion projects that basically they've agreed to donate equipment to us to help with the incubator. So, we intend to activate that. So far, they've given us a few pieces, but we haven't been able to do anything with it, large format printers and things like that. But I do expect that we'll continue to work with them on that part of the partnership.
Well, I didn't mean to get too detailed on Danfoss because I'm obviously haven't gotten the most recent information. But more importantly, I go back to my point of whether it's governmental or whether it's private, I think now is the time to see if we might be able to find some type of additional funding, whether it comes through the city, the county, state, or private sources. Adding some funds to what we've got to work with would put us in a much better position not to have to reduce the scope of the facility. So that's my point more importantly than the Danfoss one specifically. But I hope now would be the time to do that, and you could do that without changing the scope of any anything in the EDA grant. All you're talking about is additional funding to pay your costs.
Let's keep exploring this in the future. We've talked in the past about legislative appropriations, things like that. That I could see being something we look at to build out that flex space that you're talking about. And back to your point, Kevin, we can't not have a bio lab or a chem lab, and we need to start with some of that space. But if we have demand, we could, want to expand into more lab space in the future, and finding more funding so we're poised to do that in the next few years once we open this facility, or even during construction. I think that would be the time to look for that extra funding to be able to build out in the future. But
yeah, and we're just, the schedule is so tight right now as it is, and trying to now change the process. And because if you don't know you're going to have the funds, it's going to be very difficult to continue on with the design process. And we're starting schematic design today. I don't know how we stop the process at this point. The key for us is to make sure we build in as much flexibility into the design of this building so that we can adapt to whatever we need. And it is not our intent to scale this thing back to where it doesn't have value and it doesn't address the needs of in our original intent. That is not what we're talking about. We're talking about just adjusting the mix of the things that are in there, not eliminating anything, not making it unusable or invaluable, but just adjusting the mix to fit the budget. So that's all. But also to provide that kind of flexibility with the right amount of infrastructure already in place, that if we need to convert spaces for different uses, we can do that easily. Granted, it will take more funding, but again, we just need the flexibility. That's the main thing. because we don't know exactly what we need. But we are going to definitely have wet labs. We're definitely going to have both, you know, bio and chemistry labs. We'll definitely have dry labs, and we'll definitely have flex labs. So all of those components are going to be there. It's just what's the mix that we can afford to build right now that still meets our needs. That's all I'm talking about.
Kim, what time do you have to leave?
I have our meeting at 10 o'clock, so I'm
okay. Whenever. You just want to drive time to get back.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, Brandon. Did you have another question, Ray, or are we good?
No, I'm good. I'm good. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Are we moving on to the budget next?
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay.
Because
we didn't need to go through all the room data sheets and everything. Yeah, we looked at the summary.
Right.
Okay. Good.
Okay. So let me see if I've got this. Are you guys seeing the spreadsheet, Ray?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Sorry, they're not seeing the spreadsheet. So what I attempted to do here was to figure out the cash flow. And again, this is very rough right now beyond the first year. And Cam took a look at this as well to make sure we sort of anticipate how the funds are going to flow. So you can see on the left, this is what we've contracted for so far on the architectural engineering. So you can see down here, before the contingency, that's the total architectural engineering contract. And we spread that out based on the phases that we think are going to complete over time. March 2022 is important because that's when we're supposed to issue the notice of that's when we're required to issue the notice to proceed, which is when we'll start with the construction costs. So the construction cost, we just sort of spread evenly. We don't actually expect it to happen that way, but once we get the bid, better idea how that's going to happen. In the meantime, you know, at least for the next year, we've kind of got this scheduled out the way we think the funds are going to flow, with the intent of making sure that we have adequate funds on hand from our partners to fund all of this. Now, what's important to understand is the EDA only does a reimbursement, and they will only do five or fewer reimbursements. So obviously, we wouldn't want to do fewer reimbursements, but and it won't start until we hit 25% completion, and it's 25% of the budget expended, not necessarily the 25% of the building completed, but 25% of the budget. So that means they're not paying until we get well down here into about August of next year. And so you can see here, we have the four partners in the project, what they're contributing in total, and then how I think that those funds are going to flow. I've met with FSU Research Foundation, and they are going to be very flexible with how we do this. But I want to be fair to both OEB and FSU and kind of have them doing about the same amount at each time. But what I didn't want to get into is, you know, submitting, okay, here's your percentage of this bill. You know, just what we're going to do is just advance the funds and let us draw those funds out. So what I've done is I've set up a separate bank account just to handle those and keep them separated. The first payment probably not going to happen that way because I've already got the bill and I don't have board approval yet for the account. But going forward, we will have a separate account to handle all of that. So I expect beginning in June, we'll start with our first payment from FSU for $500,000, and then OEB is authorized to start paying us in July. They have $1.5 million in the first year, and then $1 million after that. So we'll cover the costs going in and all the payments out. So you can kind of see where the balance hits us. And then the challenge is when we get down here, so when it goes negative, that's okay for us. That means we're holding funds at that point.
Recovered money, yeah.
And then this is the first payment from EDA. And then this is the flow going forward. Where we get in trouble is down here towards the end. Oops. Oh, sorry. That's the monthly. Here's the cumulative, sorry. So this is the cumulative contributions at that point. So when you get down here and you see the red, that means we've gone over our 1.8 million. Okay, everyone else, OEV and FSU will be fully funded at that point by April of 23. But we'll have a shortfall when we get here. And that's basically because at this point, EDA, we're covering EDA's portion if they haven't paid us yet. So we'll be ahead of the game early, but down the road, we're gonna have to borrow funds or use our balance of our invested funds, you know, our reserve funds to cover this. So you can see if our contribution is 1.8 and we're up to 2.8 up here until we get paid out down here, we get $1 million to cover.
Just for a few months.
Just for a few months.
Since it's only for a few months, and I know these decisions can be made later, but planning for them. And by that point, we're going to be assured that, I mean, things have been tracking with the EDA already. Is there a problem taking that money out of our reserves? I mean, we've got that invested, so I could see a cost with withdrawing money and then, you know, waiting a few months and reinvesting it.
Yeah.
But that
given what we're earning on the money right now, I don't think that's a big deal.
And that's where I was going. So that cost versus debt service costs, even for a short term, it may be that this is one case where we use that reserve fund.
Yeah, I think we'll have to look at that as part of my next job, which is for tomorrow, which is for our projection, our 5-year projection.
Okay.
To kind of see how that fits in with everything else we're doing. So what I wanted to demonstrate is that there is a shortfall in here, and we'll have to figure out how to cover it either with our reserve funds or with borrowing, even if it's a short term, some sort of short term note. Which is, I don't think, is difficult to do. Is it, Tom?
It would be against receivables, basically.
Well, actually, although we can't, I don't think we can use the grant as a security loan, but
use our funds.
We could use our funds. We can certainly have funds.
That's a real bankable deal if you have to.
Yeah, and just from, we'll have to look and see where we're at that point in time to decide what to do. But I just wanted you to know that situation exists.
Actually figured it was worse than that, so that's
too. The hard part is that they said, you know, the closeout period is 120 days. Originally it was 90, now they're saying it's 120 days to close it out. So so that's, you know, just the nature. They can pay us when they want to. Okay, any questions about that?
I don't have a question about that, but I am gonna, not to reopen this conversation, but acknowledging Ray's comments about additional funding. I was gonna have a conversation with Chris Rito and the others over at the Planning Council just to talk about whether or not we should even try for program funding through the EDA. There's gonna be a lot more money coming in the future years. So I didn't mean to skip over that part. You just reminded me about it with, you know, that shortfall. While we're in process for the grant, I mean, there are other organizations that apply for a different program under EDA, and it's something we could explore. So
actually, we're already doing that with FAMU. So we have a really good relationship with David Teague at FAMU.
Yes.
And he and I have already started having conversations about that.
Perfect.
But definitely, if, you know, Chris has something. We've also been working with Richard at OED. And so we're exploring all those avenues, and when we start talking about our new director of Northwood Innovation Labs, that will be high on the list of things for that person to be doing is fundraising. So as Cam mentioned, we've got to get funds for equipment.
Yeah.
We've got to finish getting the 501c3 set up. So there's a lot of thought going into how we're gonna accomplish all of those things.
Okay.
Is there potential to achieve any funding through any of the stimulus?
The CARES funding that will go into Department of Commerce and EDA may have some components for job creation and other things like that. We've seen that before. This was a stimulus funding through Michael, but CARES dollars are going to be very different.
Okay.
So we're still trying to figure that out right now. Because a lot of it's just direct dispute, dispersion. I can't say that word right now. It's dispersed to states and locals. You may have heard Governor DeSantis is thinking of using CARES dollars to set up two workforce training programs, an apprenticeship program. So, we're going to see more about that.
That's all I had on the update at this point. And if there's any other questions about the project, we'll have obviously more information coming. We're going to talk more about the process after we're done here about when the next updates are coming. I know we're I don't know how tight you guys are on time, but hopefully the next part won't take too long. But
I had one question before we lose Cam.
Okay.
Or were you going to?
No, go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. So this is going way back to the beginning. Bidding after we've got the building permits. I understand, wanting to get through the comments, if I remember your earlier comments correctly, to make sure we have as tight a bid as possible, that they've covered everything. Given our procurement process, and this is going to the next part of our discussion about the role of this committee, that bid process and procurement process is still going to have to go through the board. The construction, contractor's not coming through. It will come through here.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what we're going to talk about.
Yeah. That's the next part. That was one little bit that timing, that it's really tight. You got 8 weeks in there for permitting.
Right.
And I think, working with the city.
That was one of the reasons we created this committee, to give us the most flexibility to get through the process without having to figure out how to get the whole board together and to tighten it down. So
I knew we had a lot of authority, and we'll get to that, but your document is really detailed. I told you that yesterday or the day before. I just wasn't sure about that particular selection of the contractor and that team, and that's right. I just wanted to come back to that. So we're good.
I would say that I don't have a firm mapped out plan for the permitting bidding sequencing today, but we can work to tighten that up and get something in front of you guys to review that will work with your process. I think we have enough time. We can submit the documents or release the documents for bid in December, but the key is getting the permit comments from the city, as you well know, and that timing, how that would work out with getting the comments, having issuing an addenda, ASI, getting the addenda out to bidders so they can have time to digest that and put together final bid numbers. So it's just a matter of working on that timing. We have, there's a couple of weeks of leeway, but not a lot. But it's a notice to proceed, so, but still we got to get the numbers.
So, again, we haven't had that conversation yet, but it's definitely on the radar. The bid document itself will be an AIA bid document, correct?
Well, the contract mm-hmm. with the contract will be a bid document. The documents are the construction documents we produce, and they'll have AIA procedures built into those.
Into the documents.
By specification.
Okay.
General conditions.
Okay. So we'll talk more about that and figure out how to get that in front of you. But yes, you have to bless the bid itself before it goes out, which is our process.
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of what he has ready to go. And I would presume that if there were changes related to the permit, I don't know that the board would have to necessarily approve those changes. I think it's just the basic bid document.
Those are going to be should be very minor in terms of the overall project.
Yeah, so that's something we might want to keep in mind in the process. And then we also have to make sure we comply with any of the EDA requirements and the federal procurement requirements and all of those things.
And we'll be sitting down with the city officials through the various phases of the project to get them familiar with the project, make sure we see things eye to eye so that we don't have any big problems there during permit review. It'll be...
Yeah, and there are also some other EDA approvals we'll have to get. Get in line.
Well, the city is, you're getting, engage with them very early. They're very aware, and we've talked to planning over the years about site and things like that. Anything we can do, and I'm glad to hear you said, you know, even elevating this to talk with Karen, with others, you know, just to make sure everyone understands what the schedule and they can assist as much as possible. I'm absolutely glad you're doing that. Yeah. Okay. Definitely. Just wanted to circle back to that real quick.
Understood.
I'm done with Cam.
We're never done with Cam, but
well, until 10 o'clock.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thanks, Cam. All right. Thank you. I appreciate everybody's time.
As it turns out, I'm glad you could make it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. Happy to be here. Just not anymore.
It wasn't my plan to schedule.
Good luck today. Thank you.
Sam, yeah, good to see you, man.
Okay. That question, Ron, you had packed so much in here, what we can approve, what we can. I just wasn't sure about construction manager. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
I got it. Are we moving into that now?
Yeah, if you're ready.
Okay. Is that okay?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Which one do you want to start or go for?
I have a big question. All right. Yeah. Not a big question, but when this thing really gets rolling, we are going to have to make decisions very frequently and lots of them. And I mean, that's what I do for the bank now. And every day I answer architectural questions, construction questions. Don't always answer them. They get fielded toward me. And I wonder functionally how we're going to handle this. I don't think we can come to the Collins Building every time and have a meeting to answer a question. Is there some other way to handle what we need to do with the public notice and decisions that we make? Can we do it by phone? Can we do it electronically somehow?
Not, and this is the challenge. And the answer, the quick answer is no. You cannot. I mean, this is a public committee. Okay. To me, the question is what decisions does the committee need to make? And how much of the decision-making authority do I have? Okay, and that was the purpose of this document. Mm-hmm. It's just sort of lay out what that authority is. So to answer your question, I think let's work through the charter and the, with that in mind, let's work through the charter and the policies and procedures to decide what kinds of decisions aren't covered here that maybe we need to talk about, how those are gonna get made. But otherwise, yes, if the committee needs to make a decision, we need to give a public notice. Basically, it's a week. I mean, there are some emergency provisions I'd have to look at for 72 hours, but you know, the other option is maybe there could be a scheduled weekly meeting, you know, that says it's here if we need it, it's already on the books. We could do that sort of thing. But again, I think if we go through the charter and the policies and procedures and figure out, and that's good that you know those things, is what are we not thinking about in these policies and procedures about the kind of decisions that you think it's important for the committee to weigh in on versus giving you the authority. And one thing I want to talk about in relation to my decision making is I'm very fortunate to have Mary Jo Spector from FSU, who's an architect, helping me. So I'm, you know, obviously I don't have the depth of knowledge that she has in terms of constructing buildings, and she's been incredibly helpful to this point. So so just keep that in mind that I'm not making decisions as the executive director alone, but getting some help with some of those decisions. So if that's okay, if we take that approach.
Last thing before you move into that, quorum requirements. So this is a 3-member committee. So at least two of us need to be in the same room, and someone else could be on Zoom. So I kind of had that in my notes to just, for both of you, I think I'll have more flexibility unless, you know, it's commission day, something like that. I mean, there are certain constraints, but I'll have a lot of flexibility. But as long as two of us are in the same room, we meet the quorum requirements. And in an extraordinary case, I think it is easier, Ron and I talked about this a little bit, to meet in this room because we have all the tech and everything like that. If we really couldn't, I mean, I thought about downtown, other things, but you need to be here with the tech, and this is the best place for us to have that quorum. So that's just one little Yeah, one or one piece.
That's
of,
a good. I mean, I'm glad you.
Yeah.
I mean, so basically, we if there was an incident where we needed to meet and one of us couldn't get here, one of us can be on Zoom. That's good.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
But only one.
I started thinking when this thing gets rolling.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of, I mean, day to day, I think the decision making, you're very capable. You always have been. There are going to be things that affect time and money, and I don't know what levels we want to. I mean, time and money are the two big issues.
That's it, and that's what you're trying to capture in the document. So we have. Notice requirements, quorum requirements, and then the decision making and roles and responsibilities. So we're good with Ron starting to go through this?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, so just to review this, this is the charter that the board approved. Okay. So this is where the board says, here's what we agree this committee is going to do, here's why you're here, what this the purposes, and here's the authority we're granting to you. So they're basically saying you have the authority to provide the oversight of the design and construction of the building. You have the you can authorize any contracts, solicitations, which would include an alternate mm-hmm. bid, and any other documents such as permit applications, etc. You oversee and direct staff, me. You can authorize the payment of invoices. You can delegate, and here's the big thing, you can delegate to the staff any of the committee's authority it finds necessary for the efficient and effective completion of the development while maintaining appropriate controls. So the board has delegated all of this to you, and you have the ability to delegate as you see fit the day-to-day operations, for example, you know, what's in that. Okay.
And sorry for interrupting, and that delegation could come kind of at this point when we're laying out the procedure or the, you know, roles and responsibilities. But then if we are in a committee meeting and we know, okay, Ron, you're gonna have to make a decision next week, we don't want to notice another meeting, we can delegate something to you in real time in that meeting, right? It doesn't have to be captured in this document.
Certainly.
Okay.
That I gives love us the a little document. More. I've read the document.
Yeah.
I just am trying to figure out how functionally it can really work.
So well, that's why I asked that
good,
question because if we're in a meeting and we know something's coming in the next week or two, that's where we can be a little more responsive.
Well, and I think part of Tom's question is or comment is that on a day-to-day basis in the field, the general contractor has a question. That question goes to the architect and to the engineer. There needs to be some RFI process where, Ron, you have the authority to work with architect and engineer and tell them they need to figure this out. They're going to provide you information. You're forcing them to work together, and that doesn't ultimately need to circle back or cycle back to this committee. You need to have the authority to make sure that between architect, engineer, and contractor that they've got, because we've already approved the program and the plan. Is that?
Yeah.
That's it.
For example, yeah.
So yeah, I'm all about delegating that authority for those day-to-day decisions to Ron, so that the process between architect, engineer, and contractor is efficient. I don't see where, unless something were to come up in that process where you look at it and say, good gracious, this is a total bust. Between architect, engineer, and contractor, they don't got it. Then that's a decision where I think in the moment you say, okay, we've got to get the committee together and then we can have the emergency meeting. But other than that, I do believe that we need to delegate to Ron the ability to work through an RFI
to run the trains.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I have a pretty good radar when it comes to, how far out on a limb do I want to go with some decision making? You know, it's as Tom said, it's time and money, and if any of those things are dramatically impacted, if we're in budget and on time and according to the program,
jump up and high five each other.
Yeah. If any of those things are going to get significantly impacted, then I know it's time to get the committee together.
And you do have in there under delegation of authority that as chair, I'm authorized to take emergency action also.
Oh, that's good. Okay.
So you can, we delegate some to Ron, but if there are those instances where we need one committee member to authorize something and then there's a notice within 24 hours.
Yeah, I let the rest of the committee know. Actually, yeah. I can do it immediately, but.
Right. It's good to have the 24 hours in there just.
Yeah, you never know.
Okay, so we're on the scope.
I wanted to point out the charter again, just because I know when I was talking to Kevin, he brought up that, what authority does the committee actually have? And I just wanted to reiterate that that's where that authority comes from. Now, if I could just find.
Well, you're looking for this. I just want to say, I did see the procurement policy and everything in there. I just wasn't thinking of all the different types of procurement. I mean, the construction management is a big one. So just wanted to clarify that earlier, but I'm glad we got everything.
So I did make that one change at the beginning based on the question Kevin had asked, just to clarify that's where the purpose and authority comes from is from that charter. So I referenced that. Otherwise I didn't get any other changes. So the scope basically just reiterates what's in the charter. The oversight of design and construction. So what I had envisioned here is that we would, the chair and I would get together based on the schedule of milestones and set up meetings around that so that there's an opportunity for you to weigh in before those, we hit those milestones. Does that seem like that solves some of that. We can get those things set up ahead of time.
Right.
And we have to move them, we'll move them, but that's going to be the approval points where, if you go back to the schedule, those approval points, obviously that's where you have an opportunity to weigh in at each of those stages.
Okay. I think that's a great idea to get those meetings on the calendar, get the notice done. We can always cancel if we need, and add in other meetings as needed.
Yep.
But at least we have those on the books for our schedules.
And on the big milestones, we probably need a little bit of a period if we have some questions or want to modify something to give somebody the time to.
Yeah, don't do it on the last day.
Yeah, don't do it on the last day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I think that's a great idea, actually.
Okay. And then again, the committee chair can call meetings. They are sunshine. The only reason for the item D there is, again, we just want to keep the room for COVID purposes skinny. But and then we will provide a report. Basically, the minutes of this meeting will be provided as a report to the board, so we can report that up. And then if the committee chair or the committee wants to report in addition, obviously every board meeting is going to have an update related to the incubator, so that'd be a good time for y'all to weigh in at that point in time. So, but the report will always be put on consent. And then authorization of contract, solicitation, other documents. The other documents, permits, and all of that, I kind of think that's a day-to-day business that I thought would be appropriate to delegate to me. Obviously, there's going to be I wanted to put some limits on it. Obviously, I can't sign away the properties or do anything crazy like that. But in terms of keeping the trains running, that would give me the authority to sign off on any of those normal course of construction types of documents. But contracts, I think we addressed in the charter. So the committee chair will sign a resolution, which is basically notice to the board chair that the committee approves this particular contract. I think the contract's just going to be the contract. I think all the subcontracting is going to be done by the prime.
Liz would like to handle a lot of the routine and give you options too, which will
help. We are going to have to make sure that we follow the purchasing policy, but it will be modified by whatever the EA grant requirements are and federal procurement requirements.
I haven't done that one in a long time. What's reviewing up? The checks, things like that.
Oh, yeah.
It's been many years.
Yeah, so, yeah, in terms of the payment of invoices for the development, I actually just got some additional information yesterday that I'm going to be able to set up the treasury management system for Hancock Bank, Hancock Whitney. It's been a problem in the past because they didn't have the dual controls that we wanted in terms of authorization of new users. They had it for individual transactions, but they didn't have it for authorizing users. So if you have a single administrator, they could create authority for themselves to not be dual. So anyway, they've solved that problem. So now we're going to be able to go to their treasury management system, do ACH payments. Unfortunately, as I mentioned, we don't have it set up yet. I'll have to get the board to approve that. But that would be my intent. It also uses a electronic device to what do they call it?
A fob.
Yeah, it's a
code
generator.
Yeah.
So it's very secure, but we'll also be able to do our wire transfers and all that other stuff that's been such a pain for so long.
That's fantastic. Good.
I think the question here is, I would venture to guess that most of the invoices are going to be greater than $10,000, which is my current signing limit. I think the question is going to be how we want to physically handle that. Is it sufficient for the board chair or the committee chair to just review? Most of it's going to be, here's the contract, here's the payment, here's the invoice. The invoice is part of the contract, it fits, here's the budget. It's good to pay, right? So the question is that sufficient if the board chair says, yes, here it is, signed off, or committee chair, it's okay to pay. And then we go through whatever ACH controls that we have in place. Or is it sufficient? Do we even need the committee chair to be involved in that process? Is it sufficient to say that I can authorize payment for anything that's within the budget and according to the contracts that have been approved? So for example, I've got a invoice right now for $34,000. That is part of the architectural engineering contract. It's spelled out in the contract. That's how much it's going to be for that particular phase, and that's the way it's billing. You know, check it off. It's obviously good. I have a document to support it. Or would you prefer to have that other check with the committee chair authorizing that?
I don't think, when we're talking about a $17 million project, there's a lot of $10,000 checks.
Yeah, I think everything's over
$10,000. So I don't know that necessarily every time passing it back to you for a second review for you to say, yep, there's another one perfectly sits inside a contract. I don't think that makes a lot of sense.
I don't either.
I would rather you have more authority. I think the question goes back to you, how much authority are you okay with? So long as it sits inside a contract?
I think as long as, and this is typical actually in our purchasing policy, that with the exception of that $10,000 limit, that it's, you know, I can buy anything that's been budgeted, you know, previously approved by the board in the budget. Okay. But if it hasn't been, then it's got to go back to the board for approval. So the big thing is the $10,000 limit. And obviously in this situation, that $10,000 limit is probably not relevant. The other thing is, I think the ACH controls help a bunch, because.
And I'm guessing you're getting AIA documents even now from.
Yeah.
I mean, they're pretty straightforward and they're.
Yep.
Hard they track to, everything.
Hard to.
Yeah, and so you've actually got another level of review, in particular on the construction side, where the architect is reviewing the invoices to make sure.
Because they're the construction administrator.
Yeah, and they're signing off and saying, yeah, this is okay.
So what? I mean, like, following Kevin's question, what do you feel comfortable with? Is it a dollar amount or is it just if it's in the schedule?
I would say if it's, I wouldn't go with a dollar amount. I would just say any invoices that are
programmed in the design and construction.
If it's been previously approved in the budget and in approved contracts, then I'm authorized to to make the payment.
Yeah. Are you okay with that, Kristen?
Absolutely.
And then anything that's not, well, hopefully by the time I know something's not, before it's invoiced, I think we will have had the conversation. Mm-hmm. But and you would have had an opportunity to approve that. So
I'm fine with that.
This is one. On that,
or did we just do?
Well, that will be one amendment. So
okay.
I think we should vote on the final with each of these amendments that we might make. As simple as adding the charter, that's different than what was in the document, in the agenda, and this. Does that sound good, Ron, that we just approve them as a?
Yes.
As a whole? Okay. So these extra levels of control and approval, I mean, I feel very comfortable. I just want to say this for the record that we've been doing this, Ron has been doing this for so long, and we have had Talcor and board chair and others involved, but within a contract scope, I mean, this is the right way to proceed with this project. Mm-hmm. I will say, Ron, I flagged this one for Gary in case I did have to approve everything so that you and I can talk about, you know, just how I make sure I'm doing it as quickly as possible, even if I'm in a long meeting or something like that. So I was concerned about making sure that I could approve it as quickly as Ron needs it. But these draws are probably going to come on a monthly basis. Anyhow, you're not going to have multiple a month. I mean, normally it's a monthly draw or something. So, okay.
There might be two. There might have a company on construction. And
so.
Mm-hmm.
So we could save it for our next meeting agenda. I would be comfortable with that. Or the end of the week, Ron, just a quick email to the committee saying, I made these payments. What are you thinking just about notifying the committee? Because this isn't one we need immediate notification.
Oh, in terms of letting me know what's been paid?
Yeah. I think we can wait until the next agenda because we probably know what's going to be coming. And we're going to be meeting rather regularly. What do you think?
I think I could just provide you, you know, as the invoices get paid, I'll just shoot you an email and say, here's our pay.
Okay.
Or you know what? Why don't I just give you an update at each meeting, if that's okay? Because I'm going to be updating on the budget and, you know, what we spent and all that.
If we need to change that in the future, if we need more notice, we can do that. But I think going for now, particularly since it's going to be mostly the architect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, updated meetings. Good. Anything else on that piece?
Yeah, so what I was going to suggest is I'll just say for invoice amounts not previously approved in budgets and contracts, an electronic copy of the approved invoice shall be submitted to the committee chair. Just change that language and set the scope of what needs to be approved by the committee chair. But I wouldn't expect that to ever to be actually implemented, because I would expect that before it ever gets to that point, the committee's already reviewed it and approved the change.
Yeah. Just while you're making the note, Ray, if you have any questions, speak up as we're going. I just can't see you because we've got the document on the screen, but just.
Did you have a question, Ray?
Well, I raised my hand a minute ago. I hate to be the only non-committee naysayer, but I'm a little concerned that when you get an invoice, you got 30 days to pay it. You got a committee chair who is an email or a telephone call away. And I would feel more comfortable with the committee chair being the one to authorize Ron verbally to go ahead, as opposed to giving any executive director carte blanche with no approval in advance. I just think that's a big step for me. Now, everybody else on the committee seems to be comfortable with that, but I'm a little concerned about that kind of latitude when you've got plenty of time and you're talking about one person, committee chair to the executive director, and but whatever the committee decides, obviously.
Ray, I appreciate your thoughts, and I guess I didn't expand on it too much, but there were times where we had lots of different, how should I say this? I feel comfortable within the contract scope with these payments because we will probably, you know, be meeting, as you say, during that 30 days to pay an invoice anyhow. I mean, I'm not anticipating that we're necessarily going to be surprised by some of these bills, particularly until we hire the construction the contractor and move forward with construction. I mean, this is going to be just the architect team for the next few months. Again, we can always change this in the future, but with Lewis and Whitlock reviewing even the construction documents, I think we will have other eyes on these invoices and on the payment process throughout. I don't think I'm addressing your concerns. I'm kind of stumbling over my words right there, but I hear you. I'm glad you voiced them. I think we can start off in this way if the committee is comfortable with it, but it can always be amended in the future if we think more notice more approvals are required. Not more notice, more approval, you know, having me involved. I really just botched that entirely. I don't know if that made sense at all, but I want to acknowledge your concerns. That's what I'm trying to do, and say we can keep this conversation open going forward. But I think if we're comfortable with it right now.
I agree. I think let's test drive what we've described in the next couple of months and through the architectural process. And let's make sure that we're comfortable with it. Let's put it on the agenda for 60 days out to revisit this item and see if we need to make an adjustment.
I like that idea. Yeah. I guess, thank you for being much more succinct. I'm thinking of it as architect, you know, just approving the architectural team's invoices at this point. Mm-hmm. It's more straightforward than what we may see during construction.
Something that is maybe more concerning to me, or not, it's not a concern. It's not the right way to say it. This becomes more intensive when we're in construction. Ron, you said that Mary Jo is going to be working with you on construction oversight?
I think the whole project.
Okay. To have somebody who can act as owner's rep and make sure that what is happening in the field is what we think is supposed to happen. Because between contractor, architect, and engineer, at some point we're going to receive the building. And at that point, once we've received it and the contract is behind us, there's so much technical about this building that we need technical eyes watching what's being built. Because at some point when we go to flip on the switch to the perangulator and the perangulator is not working the way we thought the perangulator was supposed to work, somebody's going to say, well, you accept it. And so we need somebody that understands what a perangulator is.
Well, I'm an expert at perangulators, so I just put that on
the record. The right-handed perangulator or left-handed?
No, perangulator? I only do the left-handed.
But they're also, I mean,
I get your point.
They're constructing, I mean, their warranties and all those kind of things, and we have to, I mean, this is complicated, and we got to keep an eye on it. And I appreciate Ray's statement, but I do think that with our time constraints and knowing we got to keep the train running, let's wait a couple months and see if it's working. We also have, during construction, the architect is responsible for the work that's done, and that's the way an AI document works. And so we've got a first layer that's arm's length from the contractor too. And then,
yeah, and actually we're paying for more than just the typical architect oversight. We're paying them for inspections. So they'll have
what
they call the clerk of the works on site every day.
Okay. That helps me.
So they're making sure that what's being built is to spec.
And to the cost that was allocated for
right.
that item.
Right. Yep. So yes, I will be the owner's rep.
I'm hopeful that the person we're hiring to be the next director is going to be actively involved, so that that person knows how the perambulator works. So, you know, we're going to have multiple sets of eyes on this. And then Mary Jo, while, you know, she's not going to be involved every day, I know when to consult her. The things that I don't understand or need more information about, she's been very good about that. Good. So I'm trying not to abuse the privilege of having her involvement in the project, but yeah, she'll be continue to be involved. I'm assuming at this point. But.
I appreciate all you guys, because y'all articulated kind of what I was struggling with a little bit, or much better than I did. I think the technical review is a critical point, and inspecting on site. I mean, in GC world, it's your site superintendent that's reporting back, you know, doing that site inspection, right? And making sure that everything's done and done correctly before, you know, letting your office know that you pay those bills. It's going to be the same function. So there are going to be a lot of other eyes on the work involved. And with that, much more than what I'm going to be able to do or any committee member or board member could do. We got to leave it with the technical experts. So, but Kevin, also want to acknowledge what you said, coming back in 60 days, 90 days, you know, at some point in the future, and just gut checking this one more time is a good idea.
Yeah.
Good?
I'm good.
Okay.
So the changes that I've got at this point is, aside from the one at the beginning, was in 4B, I'm changing the language to say, for invoice amounts not previously approved in the budget and or contract, an electronic copy, complete the rest of that sentence, the rest of that paragraph is the same. And then in 4, I added 4E, amounts paid and invoiced will be reported to the committee at each meeting. Is that sufficient?
It is. Do we need a motion to approve?
Well, we're going to get through the rest of it. If there's anything else that you want to change, I think we were going to take it as a whole.
Yeah. How about if you added in percent complete or something to that?
Yeah. It'll be detailed. Okay. I'll give you.
Like all you do.
Yeah. I'll give you more information than you want.
Right.
What I envision is probably going to be something like what you saw in the spreadsheet for the cash flow forecast.
I'm fine with even the AIA document.
Or we could just do that. That's true.
It's very. That's a great system.
Yep. Delegation of authority. Basically, that's A is just saying I have the authority I already have, in addition to the things that you put in this. And then we have provision for emergency actions that need to be taken, how we'll do it. This is pretty consistent with the way we do it for the board chair taking emergency actions. So that in this case, we're just saying the committee chair can take emergency actions using this process.
Any questions, concerns about that part? Okay. And it gets back to the speed of our meetings and such,
Was there anything else within, you know, you were talking about in terms of your concerns about any other need to delegate any particular responsibility, but.
No, I mean, I know how these things progress, and we've got to be real careful with time. I mean, if something comes up, we got to make decisions real quickly. And sometimes you don't have every fact you need to make the decision. You still got to make a decision. And
this might be a good place to put something like that. Add item C.
How to word that. I mean,
well, I think it goes back to what we said is basically the executive director is authorized to take all necessary actions within the current budget.
And schedule.
Schedule and scope of work to maintain the efficient and effective operation of the project or something like that. Yeah. Does that sound okay? Something to that effect, basically just.
Give you a pretty wide swath to keep the trains running.
Yeah.
we've got three amendments so far. Simple one, just adding the charter up top, and then these two.
Four, actually. So the first one, and then the two under item four, changing the invoice amounts. And E was adding the reporting of the invoice amounts. Right.
Forgive me, I wrote it on the same line in my notes. Yeah. They were both under four, so yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So we have four amendments so far. Okay.
That's anything else?
I wanted to go back and ask a question about meeting or the milestone meetings, but I didn't have anything else on the policies and procedures. Did any of you raise guy's hand up?
Oh, no. That's my mouse.
That was your hand.
That was my mouse, sorry.
There's a big white hand there. Okay, got it.
Ryan, can you just read that last edit one more time?
I'm still writing it.
Okay.
You're going to laugh, but I was waiting on the details, so I just wrote down authorized to make the trains run on time.
Yeah, I didn't know how to write that.
Pick it up on some. Okay, while you're writing this, this is more a question, well, for all of us, but so we had a little bit of a joke about 8 a.m., and it's been a long time since we've all had 8 a.m. meetings. Traffic is a little bit more challenging, but as we schedule those milestone meetings, would earlier in the day be better for us just to get it out of the way so we can focus on other things? Or, I mean, this could change based on those milestones.
It is for schedule. Me, but I don't know about y'all.
It's fine for me.
Okay. It's good for me too. Okay. So, Ron, if that works for you.
Whatever just, works for you guys, I serve at your pleasure.
Well, just the target so that Peggy, as always, is going to be herding the cats and helping us schedule these. I see the smile behind the mask, Peggy. I love it.
But you know, if we were to set them every, I mean, I guess the milestone is the best way to do it. But he could go ahead and lay them out now.
That's why I wanted to ask the question. So I just wanted to give Peggy a starting point to work with us to set up those milestone meetings. Does that sound, is that helpful,
yes.
Ron, Peggy?
Yes.
Okay. So we're good with mornings if we can look at that, the milestones, and there may be a meeting or two that we have to adjust.
That's fine.
Okay, good.
How about something to the effect that the ED is authorized to take all actions as owner's rep, a representative necessary to manage the development within the approved budget, contracts, and committee approved directives and plans.
I think that's good.
Okay. I agree with that.
And the owner's rep language is using a standard AI document. Somebody has to act as the owner's rep.
Mm-hmm.
So, and actually, I think I listed in the architect contract as the owner's rep.
Okay, good.
Taking one step back, the new director, the new hire, having that person involved, I really just appreciate you saying that. And I think having a real fundamental understanding of the building is going to be critical and very helpful for that person to not just understand, you know, day one opening, but also what the potential of the building is for the future. If they see, you know, okay, maybe we do need a new lab, something like that. Going back to that flex space conversation. Yeah,
unfortunately, they're not going to be here in time to really help a lot with the, you know, programming design stuff.
Right.
So we want to make sure we get them as ingrained in the process as we can from that point forward. So
I'm thinking even through construction.
Just
knowing the feel of your building.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's a good thing.
Absolutely.
Okay.
The great thing is it's right here too. You walk over and look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was actually one thing that stood out when you mentioned the admin space and only having one office over there. I mean, a lot of the support admin for the labs is going to come through this office,
right.
So we're not going to, I mean, it's close by. Yeah.
So do you want to go ahead and approve this mm-hmm. document with changes? Do a formal motion?
Yes, and
if you want me to read those changes again, I can do that.
Your preference. We've been through all.
I think we've been through it.
Yeah.
I'll make the motion.
I'll second.
And this is for the policies and procedures?
Yes.
Or, okay, because we've already approved the charter.
Yes, that's
previously.
Well, yeah. Actually, the board did that.
The board did that, right. So, okay.
As motion as
second.
Yep.
Okay. And I'll third that. So, unanimous support. Thank you, Ron. This was good. And thank you, Ray, for participating as always and for your thoughts. All right.
That's all I have.
That's it.
I was going to mention that I think I said this before. I do have the first invoice of $34,450. We won't have the ACH stuff in time, so I will have to get the officers to sign that check.
Right.
So I'll use our current process to handle that until I get the ACH set up. That's going to take me a little bit to get done.
So you need board approval for that, but then there'll be some time.
Yeah, the board will have to approve the treasury system, treasury management system, and then it'll probably take a couple weeks to get that set up. So we may have to do another one, but it's no big deal. It's just I'll just have Kim and Sanjoy sign the checks. I have an invoice. It's not
okay.
And they're not $1 million, but it's $34,000. So
and they're used to that process, so that's good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Anything else, John? Ray?
Good.
Okay.
Thanks, Ray.
Thank you all very much. We're off running.